Hi, and welcome to Musicians Real Talk. I'm your host, Glenn Douglas. Musicians Real Talk is a podcast which serves to provide life stories and information about musicians performing in and around the Washington, Maryland, and Virginia areas. So you understand, musicians, we arrive at the job, we exchange greetings, we perform, we break down, and eventually we go our separate ways. Rarely do we engage in our life stories or share in conceptual devices which contribute to our approach to this thing called music. The Musicians Real Talk podcast aims to fill that void. My guest today is Chris Barnes. Chris is a piano virtuoso, songwriter, choir director, vocalist, educator, and I hear the brother can dance a little bit too. Most importantly, Chris is an extremely focused musician whose vision is set on the path to establishing a solid career in the music business. And when I say the music business, I mean he understands the separation between business and music. Everyone, please welcome to the podcast, Chris Barnes.
What's up?
So, Chris.
Yes, sir.
How did you get into this thing called music?
Well, I come from a family, my father's side, they were musicians, you know, vocalists. My mom's side, they were educators. So those two combined, then you have me, because I, you know, love to educate and, you know, of course, music. I remember that music was a part of my life early on when I went to go see Michael Jackson during the Bad Tour back in 1988. Wow. He was at the Capitol Center, right?
Yeah.
I was 2 years old there, and I was the tickets were, you know, out of this world. They were really, really expensive, and I was sitting on my mom's lap. She didn't think I remembered, but you know, and this is a testament that, you know, babies can actually remember stuff, you know, around 2 years old.
Right.
So when I'm sitting there, you know, every now and then I was in and out, you know, of the concert, because you know there were times I go to sleep, and I remember just seeing this little little white figure just moving back and forth, and I'm like, man, what is that, man? Because he's like jumping over, you know, everywhere and all that stuff. And I, you know, learned that was Michael Jackson I was seeing, and just seeing him during that time, and hearing the crowd and the pandemonium. And what haunts me to this day is that I'll never hear a sound like that again for any artist. Probably, you know, I'm not sure how many moons or blue moons, spotted moons we're gonna have until we see artists like that again, but that sound I can only remember from when I was that age. I don't hear that for anybody else nowadays, any concert that I go to of a big artist, you know. So it traumatized me. And I remember I woke up one time when they started doing the intro to Bad, you know, and my mom was holding me and I was asleep, and everybody in the crowd was just saying, "Who's bad? Who's bad? Who's bad? Who's bad?" And my mom thought I woke up on the, you know, sound of the keyboards, but I didn't. Michael Jackson had a keyboardist named Chris. You know, and it was really interesting. So him and Greg Philigaines, you know, were cueing everything. And so by the time everybody was done saying, "Who's bad?" you hear Michael Jackson say, "Hurt me, Chris." Bah, 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 bah. And I shot up. I was like, whoa. I'm like, I was like, I know what I want to do now. Right, so I'm like, hearing that, I was like, okay, I'm going to hurt him. Because Michael told me to hurt him, I'm going to hurt him. I know he was talking to his keyboardist, but I'm going to hurt him. I'll take that. So I took that, you know, going in and discovered piano at a young age, would just dabble. And didn't go to school for it, you know, early on. For I think about 1 to 11, I was just dabbling. And I wanted to get a microphone for Christmas back in 1998. My brother told me to get a keyboard because they were starting a band. So in a way, he, you know, and he's a Scorpio and a jerk. he helped redirect me back to the piano, because being a vocalist, which I am, is fun. But I love to be able to be in control of the type of music that I create. Okay. So we got a keyboard, and I started relearning everything I learned in theory. And after that, I was like just picking songs from Elton John, Stevie Wonder off the radio, when the radio actually played really, really decent music. And I went through Stevie Wonder's anthology. I just fell upon it. And so then I learned, you know, it's not just about, what is it, conversation piece and characters, you know, those are the albums that my mom and my dad had. I was like, well, let's go back a little further. I want to learn about, you know, music of my mind, or even, you know, a little bit further back than that, when he finally got control of his contracts and all that stuff, or got free from them from Motown. So you have Where I'm Coming From, which is a really interesting album. Signed, Sealed, Delivered, that's when he started getting a little bit more creative juice over there. And of course, My Sharia Moore, for Once in My Life. life, but then his raw period where he found out who he was. Like, of course, Music of My Mind. Then you have Talking Book, phenomenal.
Yeah.
Inner Visions, Fulfilling This First Finale, which I feel is one of his most underrated of his classic period. That was a really mellow drama type album, you know. Oh, yeah. Very, very melancholy, of course, because he went through a near-death experience after that log fell off the truck and hit him in the head and put him in a coma for 4 days. So I love the textures of that album. Very beautiful. And the political aggression that he had in there with, of course, You Haven't Done Nothing and Smile Please. And Two Shot to Say is one of my favorites off that album. And then you have Songs in the Key of Life, everybody's favorite. But then he has another obscure one that I hold near and dear to my heart, which is The Secret Life of Plants.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
Glenn,
yeah.
I've tried my whole, like, from 14 to about 17. It took me 3 years because they discontinued that album after a while. You know, you couldn't find it anywhere. So from 14 to 17, I'm looking everywhere for this album. I go over to my friend's house, who's my brother's friend's house, who's a neighborhood down, and his father has the vinyl.
Oh, wow!
So I took the vinyl home and I just played it. I couldn't rewind, and I'm glad I couldn't rewind because I just wanted to listen to everything,
right.
Just to see, you know, how he took it to a level of new artistry. I'm like, how do you make an album about plants? And you know, I read up on the reviews. I would always, you know, go on the internet and study, like, you know, what do people think about these albums when they first came out back in the 70s and all that stuff. So when The Secret Life of Plants came out, people thought he lost his mind, you know. And I saw a picture of it was a caricature picture that somebody drew of Stevie Wonder with a stethoscope and all that stuff, you know, up against a plant, as if he was, like, you know, trying to hear a heartbeat from the plant. And I'm like, they really don't understand where he was going, you know, musically with his album. But I'm like, even at 17, it's clear as day. You know, like, the man was saying how, you know, plants relate to people, you know, the similarities and the differences. But what do plants do that humans, do that plants don't do?
Right.
Plants don't kill each other.
Okay.
Plants aren't racist. There's certain things that he was touching on, you know, in that album. And I listened to it, I'm like, but I feel like people, I don't know if everyone was just high back in the 70s, you know, hey, couldn't,
well, you know.
I mean, yeah, but they couldn't understand where he was going. And I'm like, at 17, I was able to, you know, analyze that album and see where he was coming from. And then after that, of course, you know, Hotter Than July, the Musiquarium, original Musiquarium, and Woman in Red, which is a dope album.
Chris, I want to break in here for a moment because I have a question for you. What do you think your gift is?
My gift?
Yes, I'm going to tie this back, but I want to get an idea. I want to see what you think your gift is.
Penetrating the hearts of people.
Okay. Okay, all right. Okay. So that's what you think it is?
I believe.
I think your gift is curiosity.
Interest. I can believe that.
Well, curiosity fuels knowledge. And in fact, Albert Einstein was quoted as saying, the most important thing is to not stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. Think about this. Think about how, as a young kid, as a young teenager, you were studying, you were curious about Stevie Wonder. Most of us were just enjoying his music. You were curious about his music and were studying it. Man, that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you can analyze, man.
Yeah, I want to tie that back to say that I think your gift is really I'm gonna set my phone down. I really think that your gift is curiosity, and that curiosity is what fuels your knowledge.
I believe it. Yeah. I believe it. And you know what? Saying that, I do think back. I was an investigator. I was always willing to find out the information that people might be too lazy to try to find out, because people just hear something they just want to learn. I'm like, no. I want to find out what drew him, you know, to that. What event happened in your life? Because, like I said, Fulfilling This First Finale, that's the most melancholy album that you'll ever hear from Stevie Wonder before. It's like he was on the brink of death, and I'm like, why was that? I'm like, what's up with all this, you know, Smile Please and It Ain't No Use? I'm like, Jesus, man, it sounds kind of depressing. You find out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He was in a coma for 3 days. He didn't know if he was going to live. They said if he was to come out of it, he would have had permanent brain damage. We know that he lost his sense of smell, you know, and taste. But, like, after that came this, you know, just this landscape. You know, he just, like, painted, you know, everybody's ears with this amazing music afterwards, you know.
Well, you know, Stevie being the trailblazer he was, man, I mean, he was ahead of his time. But who were some of the other artists that you studied?
Before, it was Michael Jackson. Studied, you know, years of Michael Jackson singing, dancing, and all that stuff, and then transitioned to Stevie. Then after I transitioned to Stevie, it was, you know, some of my generation, of course, Music Soul Child, you know, D'Angelo, but then Sneaks and Donny Hathaway. Now I see how he constructs music, and I see that he had, you know, a chemical imbalance, which I think was a gift. It could have possibly helped him a lot, because the stuff that he was coming up with, Flying Easy from Extensions of a Man, you know, then you have what was the name of that album from 72? Is it Everything is Everything? Or something like that? His self-titled debut, Donny Hathaway, the live version, and just hearing how he constructed music too, which was, him and Stevie are totally different, even though both of them have like mm-hmm. similarities in their vocal timbre and their textures. But Donny was the combination of thinking outside the box but still being structured.
Right.
And what he mm-hmm. wanted, because he wrote certain trumpet lines, like for Someday We'll All Be Free, and one of the trumpeters tried to do something different, and he's like, that's not how I wrote it. You know, stick to, you know, how I wrote it. He knew exactly what he wanted. He worked with Quincy. He studied composition. I listened to his interviews, and I learned how he was big on counterpoint, form and analysis. And form and analysis, I'm not sure what type of video games that you grew up on that were really, really hard to beat, but that was like Super Mario Level 3 that nobody ever seen. Forming analysis was... That's a beast, but I promise you, you do that, you come out, you know, strong, man. It's like, you could figure out anything. And then counterpoint followed after that. It was easy as I don't know what, you know, but it helped me to understand, you know, what these guys, you know, what it could have just been feeling. Maybe some of them were classically trained too. I know Donnie was classically trained, so I could see, you know, how he would transition to certain chords. I'm like, oh, okay, fifths, you know, substitutions, you know, all these diminished things going on and all that stuff. You know, same thing with Art Tatum. Studying form and analysis in school, along with my musical abilities and my ears, because, you know, of course, we all start off playing ear. You know, then we learn, you know, how to read music. But then when you take in form and analysis, now I'm like, Art Tatum's not hard at all. Art Tatum is nothing but like pentatonic scales, blues pentatonics, a little bit of Phrygian, a little bit of Locrian, and a lot of chromaticism and flurries. I'm like, the thing that made, you know, Art Tatum phenomenal, of course,
was his dexterity.
Dexterity.
Yes, indeed.
Man. His dexterity, man. You know, yes, of course he has great ears, but I'm like, it wasn't hard to pick up. And when I was at Bethune-Cookman University back in 2004 to 2008, getting my undergraduate in music piano performance, you know, everybody would be like, Art Tatum this, Art Tatum that, Art Tatum this. Oh, it's too hard, it's too hard. I would see people busting up their fingers. So I'm like, let me take a stab at this Art Tatum guy. Next thing you know, I'm hearing knocks on the door, and everybody's walking in. They're like, yo, they were like, is that a recording? I'm like, no, they were like, and even some of the deans walked in, they were like, you were playing licks from Art Tatum? I'm like, yeah, it's nothing but chromaticism. You have little flurries here and there, and then you have like a few, you know, blues pentatonics. And I played it for them back, and they were like, okay. They were blown away, but they were like, but you got to make it look like it's hard. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, do the musician's face, man. Man, look all ugly and all this stuff when you're playing and all this stuff. I'm like, no, I'm not.
I remember, man. I have to say this, man. My dad was not a musician.
Okay.
But he used to come out when I was doing my classical concerts. And he would come out and he would say, at the end, he said, you know, Glenn, every now and then, man, you got to kind of, it's okay to show some emotion when you play, because otherwise it looks kind of boring. And, you know, but what it did, when by him telling me that, what it did was made me realize that even though I was playing classical music, it didn't mean that I couldn't be emotional.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I understand that in classical there are certain rules.
Yes. Yeah, lots of restrictions.
A lot of restrictions and things, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can't be emotional. It doesn't mean that you can't feel the music.
That's true.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to go with something here, because
yes,
we started talking. You know, some see you as a schooled musician.
Mm.
Okay, because you are. Mm. What are your thoughts on the idea of being schooled?
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing.
However, okay, after being schooled, you know, or being taught, you have to become the teacher. You know, and a lot of people don't know how to transition to that, because they're always looking to be taught. there's a lot of things I had to learn on my own. I didn't learn jazz. I wasn't taught jazz. I had to learn that on my own. Classical was something that was a prerequisite. You had to, do that in Cookman, but nobody taught me jazz. So I had to spend just as much time as I spent finding out stuff about Stevie Wonder before, college and all that stuff and having no social life. Now I had to go through that again. I feel like in life, we go through these different phases where we're always relearning something new and adding that to our library of knowledge and all that stuff. And I believe that, being taught is a beautiful thing, but after a while, you have to learn how to teach yourself, because I believe that you become your best teacher after a while.
Well, one of my mentors shared this with me, and what he said was that studying is like a 7-year cycle. And what he meant by that was that you study for 7 years, and then you take 7 years to perfect what you study. And then you go back into 7 years of study, and then you go back to 7 years of perfection.
Thank you, man. Okay, because that makes a lot of sense. Too. Yeah, okay.
Well, Chris, I want to get your thoughts on this. There are musicians out here that have decided that they don't want to study music or that they don't feel that there's a need for them to study. What are your thoughts on that?
I believe it's always going to be pros and cons with those types of situations, because the reality is your talent can only take you so far. But having some type of knowledge certification, I'm not saying degrees, I know college is not for everybody, but having some type of certification or some type of paper, saying that you can do this to get a certain job done, it does. There's positions that I have that some people won't ever be able to have because they don't have a piece of paper behind their name. Being able to do the music summer camp over at the Public Playhouse, I've been doing that since 2009. You have to have a degree in music. Right. Playing at the church that I play at, you have to have some type of musical degree. You can't just have talent, because you need to know how to, read, right. Because there'll be times where, we'll have to break out books, hymns, not just hymns, but also like these elaborate spirituals, or compositions that we just have to be able to read. And so there's pros and cons. Can't speak for everybody's life. I know in my life, man, that degree became extremely helpful. I'll take it a step further. The degree became very helpful in getting into the industry. And the reason why I say that, when I met, shout out to my mentors, Carvin and Ivan, out in Philadelphia. When I met Ivan, he said I was the first person in his 20 years of being in the industry to bring in a resume. And he said, you're probably the first person to have a degree. And he said, since you came in and set the bar so high, he doesn't want to, just bring in. I mean, he'll have like regular, keyboardists to bring to maybe lay down simple little lines here and there. But to do strategic type stuff, as far as like the big compositions, not just production. Like he uses me he calls me all the time and says, Chris, I need this Herbie Hancock, record recreated from the ground up. Flutes, oboes, woodwinds, trumpets, all that stuff. I only trust you to do it, because the degree helped me in a way where as if I had to recreate, a Herbie Hancock record, which I did, I can't just, pick it up by ear. I have to know how to use the dynamics and using the software instruments, with contact, or reason or whatever, logic, whatever, and know how to play them the right way. There's been many times where I would have to be like, wait a minute, I'm playing the oboe part, but that's not how an oboe would play it. Even though the technology is that sophisticated where it sounds like an oboe, I want to make it sound like, an oboe being expressive rather than just being played. So that degree came in handy. It did, because he doesn't trust anybody else to handle those type of, big projects.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now I've adapted that saying, which I'm sure you heard before, there's levels to this. There definitely is.
Explain.
Because what I'm living right now, Glenn, I'm seeing that there's a lot of people that are living in delusion. And I've always been that person who never want to, hurt people's feelings. When I was younger, I used to be that people pleaser and all that stuff, trying to make everybody happy.
Right.
But, the older you get, you can't hide from the truth. And people can, BS, a lot of situations or other people. But after a certain, time in your life, once you've matured, you've gained a lot of wisdom and knowledge, you can't BS yourself anymore. And I know I can't lie to certain people. I'm like, look, this is not easy. doing this profession is not easy. People think, oh, Allah, I can sing. Oh, well, they have shows like The Voice, America's Got Talent, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, but nobody teaches them how to, negotiate a contract, renegotiate a contract, how to, nobody talks about writer splits. Nobody talks about publishing, ownership of your royalties and all that stuff.
Right.
Everybody just wants to be famous. That's what our society pushes. Right. But nobody wants to be educated. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to, and that goes back to what you said, teaching yourself, you know, about the business.
I had a professor who made the statement. He said, Douglas, the study of music is just as intense as the study of medicine.
He wasn't lying.
No, he was not lying.
He was not lying.
He was not lying.
He was not lying.
You know, I was thinking about this because a friend of mine, her son is on break. He's getting ready to go back to school. So I was asking her, and she said, well, I'm going to put him on the bus and send him back home. I sent him back to school. I said, okay. I said, well, Martin Luther King's birthday coming up. I said, I remember when I was in school, I had a professor who told me, he said, look, when these holidays come around, there's a lot of you want to go out and party, have a good time, but this is the time that you catch up.
Yes.
He said, you use the holiday to catch up. And I was like, okay. But then I got to thinking, I said, wow, I remember when I was on break, semester break. Before I left on semester break, my professor, piano professor, was like, these are the tunes I need you to get started on. So my break was practice.
Mine was too. I'm with you.
You know, there was no, I'm going to sit out and just hang out.
You hang out in social life? What is that?
No. I mean, it was practicing, you know. In fact, one day I remember, man, it had been about 10 degrees outside. And over at the school, it wasn't exactly the warmest place where the practice rooms were. So I used to go to school, go in the practice room. I had my heater.
Smart man.
And one of the professors one day saw me. He said, Douglas, I heard somebody practicing last night. Was that you? I said, yeah, that was me. He said, but it was cold. I said, well, I came in with my heater. He said, as long as I've been teaching, I've never seen a student do that before.
Dedication, man.
I said, well, man, I got to get it done, my man. Yeah, I got to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when we think about this whole education, and this is one reason why I asked about the school thing.
Yes.
Because, you know, I've seen musicians, man, they're fabulous musicians.
Yeah.
And they haven't gone to school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I respect where they are.
Of course.
But I always try to tell them, I said, man, look, if you go to school and you study what you know, what you're already doing, but you learn what it is, you're going to take that to a whole nother
level.
Yes,
you will. You will.
But I realize that sometimes, man, you know, we have those musicians, man, who come out the womb that are gifted.
Yeah, they're gifted, right, yeah.
And they sit back and they say, I'm gifted.
Right.
What I need to go to school for.
Right.
Now I'm like, okay. But then you have those that are determined.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I'm going to work on this thing. And I'm going to work on it. I'm going to work on it.
Yeah.
I'm constantly work on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But then you have those that are gifted.
Right.
Indetermined.
Uh-huh.
And that's when you see, like, the George Dukes and those cats. And like yourself. Like yourself,
that
man.
That is me, right.
Yeah, you came out the womb, man. You came out the womb. It's like you knew what you wanted to do. And you were in an environment where you could do that. But and also having parents that was school that said, hey, look, if you got to go to school for this.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no option.
There was no option.
There was no, you know, army. There was none of that.
Yeah.
But I love how you touched on that because, you know, I know a lot of people who are gifted who are lazy.
Well, that's what happens. And I'm not calling anybody out.
No. There's a lot of them out there, Glenn.
But they're lazy. they are lazy.
Yeah.
You know, because they know that, hey, look, I can just come in and hear this stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're walking to a rehearsal. Totally unprepared, but they just come in and I was like, oh, I'll just hear this stuff and I'll just play, you know. But then you got the cats like, I'll say like me, to come in, man, got this stuff written out, and I'm playing, if I'm playing those horn parts, I'm going to play those horn parts where they're supposed to
be. Right. Discipline.
Discipline.
You had a, you, and see, we don't talk about that much in music. People think it's just all about gifts and talents. It's discipline, because I was that person that you will always hear the saying, there's somebody who's working harder than you when you sleep, you know, they're working. I was that person.
Right.
I was that person, because there's too many people that I went to school with, much love and respect to everybody, who would say they're this, say they're that. You know, oh, check out this person, check out this person. Okay, well, I'm not going to worry about that, because I'm blocking out the noise and I'm going to, you know, focus on what I'm doing, because I know what I want. And I can't tell you too many other people, gifted, you know, and disciplined, or just gifted and lazy, who got in the industry besides, you know, me. There's only one other guy that I've heard about, you know, and I don't hear from him, you know, anymore. But he was like 3-4 years after me. But as far as my class, man, a lot of people are working jobs that they, you know, never wanted to work. And even the ones like that we talked about, let's talk about the ones who are gifted, the ones who are still probably doing music. They don't have Grammy noms. They don't have, they didn't. So that means you can be totally gifted, but your social skills might lack. You might not know how to network. You might not know how to build relationships. See, I've learned, like, watching Behind the Music growing up and all that stuff, and seeing, you know, like how, you know, Michael had a handle on his career and all that stuff. And people try to act like, you know, he was just like antisocial. No, Michael knew how to talk to people when it came to business. He was very shrewd. So you hear that stuff. You hear about, you know, Jackie Wilson, how they went broke. You hear about how James Brown, and how he was able to, you know, he was a bulldog, man. He was about his business. You hear how Ray Charles was able to get $2 more of a record that sold than Frank Sinatra back in the day, a black man. Then you hear about Nina Simone, how she showed up with a gun. You know, when you hear these stories, you know, she was about to shoot one of the executives. She was like, "Where's my money? I want my money." And I'm like, to not have to deal with that or go through that, I can still have that type of militance, but it's about business too. Because James Brown said something really interesting in that Mr. Dynamite documentary. He said it's 75% business, 25% music. I'm almost about to say it's 90% business, well, and 10% music.
Yes.
Because, you know, that was the first thing my team told me about. They were like, yeah, talent and all that stuff is cool, man, but hard work, dedication, drive, focus, you know, you always need that. And they still tell me this to this day. Continue to stay focused, Chris. Stay focused. And also, you know the business. Just as much as I have a passion for the music, I have a passion for the business. Business. And I would love to push that narrative more to, you know, people in my generation, because, you know, in my generation right now, and younger, the younger millennials, the older millennials, everybody just wants to have the spotlight on them.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Musicians Real Talk podcast. Please look for part two of my conversation with Chris Barnes, which will be published soon. I ask that you leave a comment on this platform, Facebook, or visit my website at www.glendouglasmusic.com. That's www.glendouglasmusic.com. And remember, music is God's gift to the world, and it is not your invention. Thank you for listening.